Second Chronicles 31. Well, here you've got the account of Hezekiah's apparently amazing reforms and everybody jumping in with him, going around smashing up idols and all the rest of it. And you might think, oh, wow, great reform. But then you read Isaiah. Isaiah was prophesying at the time of Hezekiah, and he is extremely critical, I would argue, of both Hezekiah and particularly the society in Judah, complaining that they were basically corrupt, that they were self-seeking, they were abusing each other, it was capitalism sort of gone way out of control, etc. And we need to balance that against what we read here. So, verse 1, when all this was finished, all Israel who were present, that is, they'd been at this great special gathering that Hezekiah had arranged, they went out to the cities of Judah, broke in pieces the pillars, cut down the asherim, broke down the high places and the altars out of all Judah and Benjamin, in Ephraim also and Manasseh, until they destroyed them all. Then all the children of Israel returned each man to his possession. Well, you see the progression. First of all, they cleansed the temple, and they took the idols out of it that Hezekiah's father had put up there. And then this crowd got so fired up at this great Passover that they did the same to the idols in the streets of Jerusalem. This is at the end of chapter 30. And now in chapter 31, they go out into the cities of the provinces and do the same. And even some from the 10 tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, also apparently do the same there. Well, this was a group mentality, and I believe that Hezekiah himself was reacting against his father Ahaz, who had sacrificed his own children, that's the siblings of Hezekiah, to the idols. And he was, I guess, humanly speaking, lucky, in between the commas, to have escaped. Of course, God was in it. But it was a psychological reaction that spread to a group mentality. And that's the force, I think, of the little phrase in verse 1, all Israel who were present. They had got fired up by this great Passover and this extremism, and now they were going smashing everything up all over the place. And people from Ephraim and Manasseh joined in as well. Well, what are we to say? They did not hold on to this reform spirit for very long at all, because Hezekiah in the last 15 years of his life effectively turned away from God, and his son Manasseh was one of the most evil kings they had, who was totally obsessed with idolatry, and all Israel and Judah with him. So, of course, you can see perhaps where I'm going, that you can go to a Christian meeting, the equivalent of the great Passover of Hezekiah. You can get very fired up because of the group mentality. And you can go out and, yes, be fanatic, but only for so long. You are on the cusp of a group mentality. You're on the cusp of emotion. Now, the call of true spirituality, and in our age, true Christianity, is a call to radical individuality. It's a call to forging an absolutely personal relationship with God and Jesus. Isaiah says that all we like sheep have gone astray, and that's why Jesus died for us on the cross. We go astray because of our herd mentality. We go astray like sheep. They do it, so I do it. Now, of course, we all like to think, oh, I'm not like that. I am a strong, rational thinking individual. But in fact, we are not. In fact, this is not the case. And you see it all around you. You see it biblically. You see how kings like Joash were good whilst Jehoiada the priest was alive. The minute Jehoiada dies, he actually turns right around and does the opposite. You see the same with Uzziah. When Zedekiah was the priest, he was good, but then after that he turns away. And so it is with people. They're influenced by those amongst whom they are. And the problem of church life, and I've got nothing against church life, but the problem is that that also can become a group mentality, where we adopt positions and apparent zeal for God in line with what the people around us are doing. And yet I think that because God doesn't want that, he will therefore bring things into your life whereby you are led out of that group mentality. That could happen any number of ways. It could happen by the church or denomination crumbling around you. It could happen because you are geographically transferred to a different area. It could happen because there's political change in your country that stops the practice of your form of Christianity. It could happen because your partner, you know, your husband or your wife turns to another interpretation of certain things. Maybe your children do. It could happen because serious immorality and hypocrisy is exposed in the church of your youth and you view things differently. It could happen because of your personal failure. Or it could happen that you are just picked on and falsely accused out of left field because of church politics, and you're chucked out of your beloved church of your youth. Any number of things can happen. And God is in all that because he wants you to individuate. Remember Job? He says that I shall die and worms will eat this body, but in my flesh I will see God. He believed in the resurrection of the body, whom my eyes shall see for myself and not another. In other words, the light at the end of the tunnel for him was this totally personal relationship between him and God. And you read at the end of Revelation that God will wipe away all tears from our faces. That's what you do to a child when you are totally engaged personally with that child. You don't do that to a group, you do that to an individual. And yet, you see, these people, verse 5, were extremely generous. As soon as the commandment was published, the children of Israel gave in abundance the first fruits of grain, new wine, oil, honey, etc. And they brought in this tithe abundantly. It was so huge that it resulted in massive heaps, verse 6, being built up. In the third month, they began to lay the foundation of the heaps and finish them in the seventh month. Now, the grain harvest was in the third month, that's Pentecost, and the harvest continued until the end of the fruit harvest in the seventh month, which was a feast of tabernacles or ingathering. So the response, as always with Israel, when there was a need for donation, oh yeah, they were all into it, big time. But then, as I say, remember Isaiah's critique of how they really were, that in their hearts they were very far from God. So again, generosity even can become a group thing. And what you can say is that we are being called to radically be individual before God, to not be mama's boys, to not be influenced just solely by living out the expectations of parents or whatever. And you see how this group mentality was not altogether spiritual. It reads good at this point, and it looked good. But as I say, it was all Israel who were present at this great big feast of the Passover who went out to the cities of Judah, verse 1, and started smashing everything up, all the idols, etc. So there's nothing wrong going to church, going to gatherings, going to praise sessions or whatever, and coming away as people say, oh, I was walking on cloud 9 spiritually, but then it all crashed on Monday morning, I go back to work. Well, yeah, that's not wrong of itself. But I'm saying that true moment-by-moment relationship with God and his Son is a lot more than riding the cusp of emotion, because that wave has to fall at some point. And if when it falls, there's nothing left. Well, what actual value was it? This is the problem, I think, with a lot of Pentecostal-style worship, that there is this great intensity of apparent devotion whipped up in the hours that people are in the church building, but then where does it go? You go around preaching in prisons and you inquire about people's religion, of the prisoners, you see that it follows percentages in society. If there's, for example, 1% of people in a society are Pentecostal, well, you get 1% in prison. Pentecostals, same with all these groups, Jehovah's Witnesses, Christadelphians, Baptists, Catholics, the lot. It all more or less follows the percentage in society. The prison population is roughly that of the incidence of those folks in society. So The bottom line is not how carried away you are at a gathering, but who you really are when nobody's watching.